I'm speaking with Sean Dean, Vice President of Product Development at ISO Claims Partners, and today we're talking about Medicare recovery against property and casualty insurers and self-insureds. Thanks so much for speaking with us today.
Good afternoon. It's my pleasure.
So I think we first need to talk about Medicare and the different coverage parts. Can you provide a quick background on the differences in Medicare Part A, B, C, and D?
Absolutely, and it's a great place to start when you're trying to understand where the intersection is with Medicare Secondary Payer Compliance and Medicare Advantage Plan or Medicare Part C compliance. So Part A and Part B is known as our traditional Medicare with its passage back in all the way back in 1965, and it's our well-known single-payer fee-for-service, essentially national social insurance program that's administered right at the federal level by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And it encompasses Part A, which is hospital, and Part B, which is outpatient. And there are about 57 million beneficiaries here. And eligibility is typically determined by your age, if you're 65 years of age or older, or if you're on Social Security disability for a certain length of time, as well as end-stage renal disease if you're going through dialysis or have ALS. Now, that's contrasted with Part C, so fast forward all the way to 1997 when there were laws that were passed which created Medicare Advantage or Medicare Part C. And essentially, this allows an otherwise eligible Part A, Part B enrollee to pay an additional premium to a private healthcare company and have their benefits administered by and through that plan. Now, the reason the Medicare moniker is attached to Part C plans is because the plans are paid for by the federal government at a monthly capitated rate, so per enrollee within that plan. And one of the reasons why a beneficiary may choose to enroll in a Part C plan is because for the additional premium, they receive additional benefits not otherwise covered under the traditional Part A, Part B, and you know, things such as hearing or vision. And enrollment's really spiked within the last few years. And while the majority of folks on Medicare are still covered under our traditional Part A, Part B, about 57 million, Medicare Advantage enrollment has increased. It's about a third, so 19 million folks are enrolled in MAPS. But don't let the numbers necessarily fool you, because it really varies. Penetration varies by state. So, for example, in larger states such as California, Florida, New York, and Pennsylvania, penetration's relatively high, so upwards of 40%. While you take a state like Wyoming, it's at like 3%, so it really can vary. And I think something to note, too, with Part C plans, while you have Part A and Part B solely through the federal government, Part C plans are all healthcare plans administering these benefits, but there's only a few top players. So, for example, United Healthcare, Humana, Aetna, and Blue Cross Blue Shield are the big players. And then kind of switching gears over to Part D, jumping ahead even further to 2003 with the passage of the Medicare Modernization Act, that created Part D, or prescription drug coverage. And much like Part C, Part D is administered through private companies. There are about 42 million beneficiaries in Part D plans, oftentimes two, not to confuse the alphabet soup there with Medicare. Part C plans often include a prescription drug coverage, Part D coverage embedded in it. But you could also have a Part A, Part B beneficiary who purchases a standalone Part D plan as well. So that's the differences between Parts A, B, C, and D.
And so what are the exposures for insurers under Medicare secondary payer rules?
Yeah, so it's quite extensive, and in order to get to the crux of where the exposure lies with respect to Medicare Advantage and the intersection there with Medicare Advantage and Medicare secondary payer, you kind of have to look at what Medicare secondary payer is. And if you break it down, it's basically just federal provisions that govern Part A and Part B. Basically, they're in place to prevent Medicare, Part A, Part B, from making a payment when there's an insurance carrier that's otherwise responsible for treatment that's associated with a bodily injury claim. So through this kind of coordination of benefits process, the Medicare secondary payer seeks to preserve the integrity of the trust fund by preventing Medicare from making payment when there's an applicable primary payer. The reason being is because the Medicare trust fund is being depleted, and I think the latest report said it was supposed to exhaust in 2029. Now, again, in general, the Medicare secondary payer prohibits payment when there's this primary payer available, but Medicare does allow for a payment known as these conditional payments. So if an insurance carrier isn't available to pay promptly or soon, Medicare will make a payment on the condition that it's reimbursed. And that provision really is there in place to ensure that beneficiaries get treatment and so that providers can get paid. But it's a really critical concept to understand that Medicare has the right to recover and recoup the conditional payments that they make. And so under Medicare secondary payer, there are these requirements around alerting Medicare to instances of MSP events. That's called Section 111 mandatory insurer reporting. And there are also governmental contractors and all these processes in place to assist with the recovery of conditional payments. And Medicare has this really unique right of recovery here. And in fact, they can bring a federal court lawsuit for double damages to recover those conditional payments they've made. And so there's also this provision in the MSP statute that allows for a third party to bring a lawsuit, and it's called a private cause of action, sometimes referred to as a PCA. And this allows a party to bring a civil lawsuit in an instance where an insurance carrier fails to provide a primary payment. So attached to this private cause of action is this potential for an award of double damages. So lots of exposure associated with that. And this is kind of where Medicare Advantage makes its intersection with Medicare secondary payers. So for years, Medicare Advantage plans had sought recovery, had brought all sorts of lawsuits against carriers to make recovery. But in those instances, Medicare Advantage plans, as private entities, they weren't afforded the same rights as the federal government. So most of those cases were dismissed. The plans were really weren't successful in availing themselves to provisions under Medicare secondary payer. In fact, Medicare Advantage plans have their own sets of federal recovery rules, but nothing there in those rules gives them the same double damages suit that the MSP has in the private cause of action. And it really wasn't until the appeal and the decision in a case styled In Re Avandia back in 2012, where Humana, which is a large Medicare Advantage plan that I had referenced, made an argument that the private cause of action provision under Medicare secondary payer, that they, meaning the Medicare Advantage plan, had a right to recover and claim double damages. And this provision had kind of long been thought of as relief for a claimant beneficiary to step in the event their insurance carrier didn't make a payment. But in In Re Avandia, which is a Third Circuit decision, the court found that basically any private plaintiff that had standing could bring a private cause of action. And I think most practitioners, including myself, and most insurance carriers, P&C carriers out there, thought it was a pretty surprising outcome. And then you fast forward 4 years later, the 11th Circuit, in a case called Humana versus Western Heritage, that court held the same exact way. And in fact, it went a little bit further to say that double damages were basically mandated in those instances. So it creates this unique exposure there for carriers potentially just by virtue of having a claim with a Medicare Advantage beneficiary. And if the Medicare Advantage plan makes a payment, the carrier could potentially be exposed to a private cause of suit suit for double damages.
So are there jurisdictional differences as well?
Yeah, so there definitely are. Certainly in states that encompass the Third Circuit, so New Jersey, Delaware, Pennsylvania, U.S. Virgin Islands, and then for the Western Heritage decision, which is the 11th Circuit, that's Alabama, Florida, and Georgia, the precedent from In Re Avandia and Western Heritage, it's going to apply and be binding in those jurisdictions. But that doesn't necessarily mean, though, that just because you're not in one of those jurisdictions that a private cause of action suit can't be brought. And in fact, we've seen in jurisdictions such as Louisiana and Texas and Virginia, these various holdings being adopted regarding the In Re Avandia rationale, allowing the private cause of action suit to proceed. So don't just think you're safe just because you're outside of the Third Circuit or the 11th Circuit.
Are there best practices that insurers can use?
Definitely. And I like to break down best practices with any type of complicated compliance obligation into hopefully some simple steps that folks can take away. And I'd say the best way to avoid exposure for insurers is to develop a compliance program that essentially addresses four simple things, and those would be 1, identification, 2, analysis, 3, mitigation, and 4, resolution. And I can walk through each of those in turn, but first, identification, all you're trying to do there is simply identify if you're dealing with a claimant that's a Medicare Advantage plan beneficiary. So you want to determine who the plan is, what's the what the plan ID number is, what the dates of enrollment were, and the question you're trying to answer there is, did the dates of enrollment for that claimant overlap with your particular loss? And then from there, you want to obtain and identify a printout with the lien charges. So you want to determine exactly what the Medicare Advantage plan entity is contending that it's owed. And secondly, analysis. So you want to take a look at those charges and identify if those charges are causally related to your underlying loss to determine if you have any legal basis potentially to dispute those. And if you do, then you move to the mitigation phase. So you engage the Medicare Advantage entity in a dispute to eliminate or mitigate against that exposure. Something also to note here with Medicare Advantage plans is they'll allow you to avail yourself to negotiation, whereas Medicare, traditional Medicare Part A, Part B, allows for dollar-for-dollar recovery. You're dealing with a private entity when you're dealing with a Medicare Advantage plan. So you can wheel and deal sometimes cents on the dollar versus having to pay dollar-for-dollar. And then lastly, resolution, ensuring that any documentation you're obtaining from the Medicare Advantage plan, you keep a record of it. If the Medicare Advantage plan agrees to a partial waiver or a negotiation of a lien, or they agree to eliminate it, make sure you're obtaining all that documentation. And also, you know, be sure if there's a payment obligation there to obtain explicit payment instructions and make sure you get that check to the right place so you don't avoid not reimbursing the Medicare Advantage plan and having further exposure beyond that.
So are there changes to the secondary payer rule expected?
Well, with regard to Medicare Advantage plans and its intersection with Medicare secondary payer, I kind of have a wish list of things I'd love to see change, but currently there isn't anything that I'm aware of that's on the horizon with respect to pending legislation as it relates to Medicare Advantage plans and its intersection with the MSP. I do think a big issue, though, that's gaining traction is the ability or lack thereof of a primary payer carrier to systematically obtain Medicare Advantage plan enrollment information. This is a big, big problem. It's probably one of the largest challenges currently that property casualty insurers have. So under Medicare secondary payer, primary payers can utilize a query to obtain Part A and Part B enrollment information. However, Part C information isn't returned to the primary payer on this query. Medicare actually shares this information with Part C providers, but it's not a two-way street. They don't, in turn, share Medicare Advantage plan information back to the property casualty insurer, the primary payer. So Medicare Advantage plans really have a leg up on identifying instances where they could seek recovery or potentially bring a lawsuit. However, insurers do not. So I think a change to allow primary payers to programmatically obtain Medicare Advantage plan enrollment information, such as the plan name and ID and dates of enrollment, since it already exists in that Section 111 ecosystem, is going to allow primary payers to then proactively engage the applicable Part C plans. There really needs to be some reform around there, because if they can't do that, then they can't go through those steps of identification and analysis and mitigation and resolution.
Thank you, Sean Dean, Vice President of Product Development at ISO Claims Partners.